Hello and welcome to the Richard Hunter interview. As ever, this is the place where I'll be discussing matters of interest with a whole range of investment experts. In this episode, I'm pleased to be joined by Matthias Siller, co-manager of the Barings Emerging EMEA Opportunities Investment Trust. Matthias is head of the EMEA Equities team and co-manager of the Barings Eastern Europe Equity Strategy and the Barings Emerging EMEA Opportunities Strategy. He began his career in fund management in 1997 at Raiffeisen Central Bank Austria as a market maker and proprietary trader in Central and Eastern European equities and derivatives. Prior to joining the firm in 2006, he was a portfolio manager for Central and Eastern European equities at Raiffeisen Capital Management. Before that, he was an EMEA equity portfolio manager at Barwag PSK Invest. Matthias is a member of the CFA Institute and holds a master's degree from Vienna University in economics and business administration. Now, when we last spoke in April 2020, the trust was entitled Barings Emerging Europe. It is now the Barings Emerging EMEA Opportunities Trust. Could you explain to us what has changed?
Yeah, certainly. I think this was a very important change that we made. I call it an evolution where we shifted our focus away from only emerging Europe to the broader area, and that's the emerging markets of Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Thereby, leveraging the talent and expertise we have at Barings, so it came very natural to us. Ultimately, the aim is to make our shareholders benefit from a larger scope of stock picking opportunities in a region that we believe to be a very exciting one for the next couple of years. That's the idea behind it.
Sure. So, are the objectives and the strategy the same? And perhaps you could remind us what those are for the trust.
They haven't changed, and they are very straightforward and easy to understand. We focus on growth at a reasonable price, and we do believe that there are a large number of stock picks and an exciting backdrop to actually live and find this stock picking opportunities in what is a broader scope of geographies and therefore a better diversification. So the objectives haven't changed. The objective is to pick interesting stocks in what we think is an under-researched portion of the world. It's not really in the focus of emerging of European investors. It's also not, it's also rather a sideshow from the perspective of global emerging markets. So you get a relatively under-researched but very exciting region where you can actually live a process that's based on stock picking and finding opportunities in the growth at a reasonable price space. All of that also doesn't hinge on one or two economies anymore. It has a wider spread in terms of geography. It's all one large time zone, if you want, the time zone we are in, but it's much better spread across this time zone, and we believe this will eventually lead to a better Sharpe ratio, i.e. a better relationship of returns and the underlying volatility.
So with that in mind, what are the sector and indeed geographical weightings of the trust?
They are now much more balanced as they used to be, and if I may start with sectors, Richard, we very much focus on consumer related sectors, but have a second lineup, if you want, an export focus too. So I think this is the best of both worlds, right? So we are focusing. We do see a lot of development, exciting developments in the consumer space. Be that offline, old school, if you want, or really kind of leapfrogging technologies and digitalization, you name it, right? Across kind of all life cycles, we do see an interesting opportunity in the consumer-related sectors, and at the same time, we believe that there are companies that will benefit from this core export strength that can be seen in certain sectors such as metals and mining, but also manufacturing. So this is you know, where you would find a large part of our exposure. If you then kind of sum it up and, you know, give it a proper name, that would be consumer discretionary, consumer staples, e-commerce, internet, and of course financials. That would be the mainstay of our portfolio, I want to say, in terms of sectors, and that would then be backed up by metals and mining, plus energy to a certain degree, much smaller than before. Energy, I want to highlight here, and lastly, a good portion of utility-related infrastructure assets that kind of round picture and hopefully provide our shareholders with what is going to be a well-diversified approach to what I find is an exciting stock picking backdrop.
Okay, and in terms of geographical weightings?
It's a bit along the same line. In terms of geography, we kind of didn't feel that this substantial weighting of Russia, which used to be the case when we talked the last time, you know, is something, you know, that would really live up to regional mandate and to a diversified approach. You know, we do like the opportunities that we find in Russia, but political risk is a reality in the world that we're living in. Therefore, you know, you will be very happy to report that the overall geographical exposure has also become much more diversified and now centers around the Middle East, South Africa, emerging Europe, a bit of Mediterranean exposure, plus Russia. So it is, you know, I think a much broader and much more exciting lineup compared to our last conversation.
Sure. And to put some colour onto that, could you talk us through perhaps a couple of your top holdings or positions at the present moment?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think, you know, in the, you know, kind of echoing, right, the expertise that we have and the makeup that I've highlighted to you before, I want to start with one particular stock pick that we currently see in Russia, right? So this is kind of me linking up to the recent past and to our latest interview, and that's Gazprom. Gazprom is the largest hydrocarbon producer in the world. It's not the largest oil producer, it's the largest hydrocarbon producer in the world. And the fact that it's not the largest oil producer is a big advantage, because those hydrocarbons I'm referring to, those molecules that I'm referring to, are essentially gas. And we do see that the market is actually picking up a much more, the market is quickly picking up an understanding that the future of gas is going to be decisively different than oil, and that the idea that gas might well serve as a bridge fuel between our global ambition to wean us off the dependency on hydrocarbons, especially coal, with regards to electricity generation, and oil with regards to transport fuels, could actually usher in, you know, a golden era of for gas that benefits from the fact that gas can actually be a substitute, a low-cost substitute. And when I say cost, I also refer to CO2 costs. Therefore, a greener and low-cost substitute for more environmentally damaging hydrocarbons such as coal or oil, and therefore we do believe that you know, Gazprom's current situation is one that allows the company to benefit from the trends that I just highlighted. Plus, this is coupled with a major change, a sea change, I would even say, at the company, where we do see that the ESG-related issues around environmental, but also around corporate governance, are being tackled. And we see a substantial improvement on that front and an understanding of the major shareholder, which is the Russian Federation, that it's in the interest of everyone, of all stakeholders, to see Gazprom develop along the lines that I just highlighted. So if you kind of net it up, sum it up, you'll get an interesting investment proposition. That's why Gazprom is currently our largest holding. Though, you know, what I just said will be underscored to what I believe is going to be an interest and dividend yield of between 12 and 14% at the current share price from 2021 earnings to be paid out in June 2022. The second company that I wanted to highlight is MTN from South Africa. It's the largest mobile phone operator. Here, you know, we see an interesting situation evolving that has to do with I think very shrewd investments of the company in the past. Not only into mobile phone infrastructure, but also into mobile payment solutions. Both investments are kind of were overlooked by the market for quite some time, but, you know, come into fruition as we speak, and that will allow, we think, the company to reap those benefits, see very attractive return on invested capital on those rather large propositions, right? These are not sideshows for the overall MTN. When I talk about the infrastructure, when I talk about African mobile payment solutions, these are certainly not sideshows. These are decent. These are business lines that are of substantial size and do influence the overall valuation of the company profoundly. And we, you know, we are quite positive. Even though the stock has performed quite nicely over the years so far, we do see more potential here, and we do think that the upcoming listings, potential spin-offs and IPOs of the business lines that I just highlighted will provide the market with more information about the underlying value that we see in those businesses, and that should drive the stock higher from our perspective.
And obviously, we've been through a pretty extraordinary 18 months or so, pretty much since the last time we spoke, actually. How has the trust coped with that extraordinary environment?
See, that's a very good point that you highlight, Richard. I think this was certainly like a test, for everyone, but certainly also for, what used to be Baring Emerging Europe PLC and is now Baring EMEA Opportunities PLC. I think we stood the test really well. I think it has also paid what we eventually found out is that our drive, the evolution that I've highlighted into a more diversified approach, certainly paid off too, right? We already saw during those times that, you know, there's a dividend to be reached there's a dividend for investors in terms of how to benefit from a broader diversification. So that allowed us to, you know, keep a cool head and make astute investments when the market was quite panicky, right? So I think the main takeaway from me is that we got the first-hand experience of the benefits of a broader diversification, and I think we also, kind of lived up to the expectations insofar as, you know, we used that to invest quite thoroughly without feeling that we are not well enough diversified. So that's certainly, I think, a very positive takeaway from this underlying increasing diversification that Baring Emerging EMEA Opportunities did achieve.
Okay, and I suspect diversification may come up again here in the final question. Obviously, on the plus side, we've had markets supported by extraordinary monetary and indeed fiscal stimulus. On the other side, there's questions about valuations and indeed inflation. So from your perspective, Matthias, what is your outlook from here and how are you positioned?
Yes, I do see this. I do see these issues as the same as you do, right? Markets are expensive and fired up by global, intervention from the side of central banks. I really want to appeal to our listeners that EMEA could stand out in a situation like that. In a way, it's a very orthodox approach that, you know, a lot of those markets are subject to. The Russian central bank, for example, is one of the most orthodox in the world, right? So in with regards to monetary policy, I think we can say that EMEA is as a whole, right, finds itself on a profoundly less frothy standpoint. It's also a lot of, it's also, mind you, from the European perspective, for example, it's also offering a lot of sovereignty from the monetary perspective, i.e. independent, not central, not European central bank advocated, but independent central bank, independent currencies. That's one thing. Secondly, those markets are really cheap, right? So, I mean, this is valuation is or has become, I would almost say, almost a bad word, right? When you kind of argue that there's a lot of value in a stock or in a particular market, but I don't think this should be the case, right? This value that I'm referring to is not based on sunset industries. The value that I'm highlighting is actually based on you properly forecasted, a diversified geographic and a diversified sector-wise approach that allows to marry, I believe, growth potential without having to compromise on valuation. And the best indicator from my perspective is a proper and solid dividend yield, which we are generating for our shareholders. And this dividend is actually rising over time. So, that's indicative of the underlying growth potential that I highlighted to you. So it's an attractive valuation that allows investors to benefit from a strong dividend yield at the current share price. This is between 3% and 4%, and we see it rising. This is a dividend per share that is going to go up in the future, and that's indicative of the growth objectives that we follow and that we are going to see coming through. So it's a growing portfolio that underpins this dividends, both in terms of revenues and in operating earnings. And that makes me very positive that in a backdrop that you just highlighted of very high global valuations in equity markets and a kind of an idea that there is no alternative, right? This might well be right a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, where EMEA investments and bearing emerging EMEA opportunities could really shine. And me and my team, we are going to make our best to benefit from this kind of setup for our shareholders.
Fascinating thoughts. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. So many thanks again for your time, Matthias, and for those valuable insights. That was Matthias Siller, co-manager of the Barings Emerging EMEA Opportunities Investment Trust. And thank you for listening. Please feel free to like and subscribe. And of course, you can find much more by the way of investment insight and ideas at ii.co.uk. I'll be back next Tuesday with another Richard Hunter interview. Bye for now.